And to stretch, shift your posture. Do what's needed for the body. There was a wise old sage that said, there is really only one question worth considering, and that is, what is it that you're unwilling to feel? This evening, I'd like to talk about, reflect upon, one of the sacred gateways to the timeless. And that is the heart. In the Buddhist tradition, there is a lot of teaching on compassion, kindness, joy, and to some extent strength. But I like to talk about love. Because after all, what is it that preoccupies us? Turn on the radio and listen to the songs, or the movies. It's interesting with love. The most down-to-earth, everyday phenomena. And then love has this whole arc to the deepest possible insight and realization. The love between beings, potentially, this is the arc, the sense that there is love within oneself. I am love. To everything is love. But mostly how we know love, the frustrating romantic relationships and entanglements. Anyone that didn't have some of that in life? complicated love, not having been loved enough, feeling unlovable, having been suffocated and smothered by love, hiding our love. So why do we need love? What makes us so preoccupied? Because honestly, we want to have it. We need it. We want to give it. We need to experience love. If not, it's not a worthy human life. It's a dry life. So we're drawn to love, and yet we may have a limited perception of love. So we move towards it in all the ways we can. Maybe at times the way we move towards is stumbling, a bit hesitant, insecure. Could be said that we practice to unveil love, to come up against the barriers towards love and unveil them. When we start to engage the heart center this afternoon, just a little bit of breathing around the heart, with the heart, checking in the weather of the heart. Each time we engage the heart with presence, it promotes a deepening. Begins a process of clarification. No, not a quick fix. But the heart is quick to respond. Even a heart that's gone into complete hiding is quick to respond. It is, of course, where we're the most personal. We can have insights and understanding in the mind. Wow, I see. But it's made personally relevant. It's made ours in the heart. And then there is another process involving the belly. We may come to that. The heart is the location where we metabolize experience, lived experience, where we integrate. And as we know, because there is so much living we have to do, and there is so much going on, that life experience cues up. It's quite rare to be up to speed in digesting life experience. That's why when we come on retreat and we begin to practice presence, which opens up a space for us, what has not been digested, integrated, comes knocking from within. The old memories, the loneliness, the old ideas about ourselves are wanting, the things that we are unwilling to feel. Our heart, of course, also has an ancient instinctual nature, because everything about us is an inheritance from those that came before us, all the way back to the first one-celled creatures in the original sea. And our heart moves in the same instinctual way. It opens tentatively and closes, you know, like the clams in the sea. In the Sufi tradition, the heart is described as having a watery nature. It's a watery phenomena. And in fact, heart and brain are the two organs that contain the most water in the body. The heart reaches out when something maybe is sweet and good. But when something is threatening, quick to pull back. So we know when we come on retreat, and perhaps when we signed up, the heart swelled with yes. And then we come into the dining hall and the heart goes, oh, too many people. We want to speak and share when there's time for that. So there's a movement towards, I want to share something of my heart, but at the same time the heart goes, oh, too much. It's too much. We can begin to track the instinctual movement of the heart, opening, closing, opening, closing. The more we turn to the heart, our life is less about surviving. And then the refined ways that we're surviving, it's like I'm going to be somebody and I'm going to make it and I'm going to make it work and I'm going to have control and be on top of it. The heart inquires in a different way how to live, how to be with one another, how to care for this, our home, the earth. What's true? When we practice to be more present, which means to be more here, to have a sense of here-ness, not in an imaginary future, I'm not in a constructed memory of the past, I'm not at a little bit of a distance from here, sort of observing it. I'm here. And when we're here, here-ness can have a certain taste, a certain smell or fragrance, if you like. It can have a certain quality. Sometimes presence is just absolutely still, like still lake water, like the night sky. Sometimes presence is bubbling with lightness, like spring sunshine, excitement. And one quality of presence is love. It's one way that presence comes manifest. So love is the quality of spirit that most profoundly connects our human life to depth. We spend so much time living horizontally, right? It's like, did I keep track of everything? And yet in our hearts we long for the depth. Without love, there isn't really a spiritual path. It's actually the driving force, unless there is a flame of love in the heart. We don't have what it takes. We get distracted. We can't approach the journey of awakening from an idea in the mind. Like, that would be interesting. It is love that enables us to turn to that which is hard to bear and face it, be willing to know it and feel it. And there is a lot that is hard to bear. It is not easy living a human life, even when our life circumstances are pretty good, still not easy. So this love then, is it a feeling? Is that what it is? A sense of sweetness, perhaps, sense of belonging, of being part of something you give, receive. We can't make love happen, that we know, right? Either it's there or it's not. We can value love and what we value as a way of becoming more pronounced. Can't make love happen. Love is something that arises out of, through us. So it's not like we can work on love, right? Like, I'm going to work on love now. From now on this retreat, I'm going to work on love. I'm going to make myself more loving. Sometimes we try that on the path because something touches us and we go, I should really be more loving. And then we try and then it doesn't quite taste right. We know when somebody starts to have a really loving voice in everything they say. May you be happy, audience. Love is something else than that. But it's true that the effect of love makes us more sensitive, more attuned to life and ourselves. When we dare to come closer to that amoeba heart, that is so sensitive that it just kind of quivers. Just the slightest little shift and change, and the heart perceives it. We know, of course, that the heart can be constricted and limited. Trauma, the hurts, what has not been digested, all these things begin to limit the heart. For example, if we only know how to express angry reactions, quick to anger, quick in lashing out, but never allowing ourselves to feel the vulnerability and expose the hurt underneath. That way of protecting oneself will limit the heart. It will hurt us. But the beauty of practice of presence is that intrinsic to heart presence, sort of hiding in plain sight, is something that's powerful but more subtle than the love of life and the love of other beings. It's the love of truth. When we're present in the heart, it's like our navigation system is switched on and functions. It's like a particular GPS system that orients towards truth. No bullshit. So the nature of the heart is not only about feeling, but a very clear perception. Actually, the heart is the location of true objectivity. Let's do a little micro exploration. I'll just take a minute or so. So if you just close your eyes, and you don't need to get into a profound yogic position here, just close your eyes. And if you want to put a hand on your heart and then relax your face and your closed eyes, then with the power of your imagination, imagine that from the back of your eyes, two pathways or pipelines move downwards on each side of the neck, all the way down and into the heart, so that there is a connection, a pipeline, channel from the eyes, side of the neck, and down into the heart. And just feel that pipeline and connection. You can feel both eyes and heart at the same time. And just feel that for a little while. And then in your own time, open your eyes, and when you open your eyes, you can look outside or somewhere in the room. Let your heart look through your eyes. Just let your heart make use of your eyes. Let's see what that is like. Love becomes real when our heart's eye develops. The seeing, I see you. So love, not only feeling, but also seeing. Newborns are set up to look for the face of the loved ones, of mother and father, mothering person, fathering person. In Rumi, ancient poet, a line from one of his poems, he says, "From the beginning of my life, I've been looking for your face." And he's referring to the face of love. We do look for the face of love. The more the eye of the heart becomes accessible, part of how we live, rather than closed off and hidden, split off, it just increases our capacity to appreciate life. And that means that life becomes more experientially available to us. We get more life, and therefore time becomes more experientially available to us. I don't have enough time. Time is running out. All the ways we're hurrying on the way to the next day. Heart presence has this capacity to slow down time, so we have more of it. Not so good if you're waiting for the meditation bell to ring. Those of you that have been on retreat before know actually the effect of heart presence. At the end of a retreat, almost always, something in our perception has shifted. So at the last meal before leaving, there's a kind of affectionate perception happening. It's like, these wonderful people. And the chickens. And the cats. We see things differently. And I don't mean the rosy, being in love kind of thing. That's fine too. It's an effect of practice. We become more affectionate. On the way to that, we have to work with the hate and the disgust and the judgment and all of that. The way the heart is veiled and obscured has to do a lot with reactivity. When we find that we're reactive in life, it has often to do with the heart. The way the mind is veiled is often about stories and identity, who I should be, what life should be like. And when it comes to the belly center, it's a lot about hardening and control and the ways we hold ourselves in a fixed position. So Rumi again says, "Your task is not to seek for love, but merely to seek and find all the barriers within yourself that you have built against it." So we can pay attention and inquire psychologically, yes, but not only psychologically. This is a journey of spirit. What are the barriers to love? I'm scared. I'm afraid of being rejected. I don't feel worthy. I'm not sure I have a heart. One of the things that happen in practice is that we practice and then life starts to become a little bit easier, a little bit smoother. And then it's almost like we kind of put up our tent. It's like, okay, this is pretty good. I'll stay here. It's like we make camp. We find a little perch. It's like, I'll stay on this stick. And that's understandable. We find a resting place. And we go, it's good enough, isn't it? It's like, I'm awake enough, sort of, on a good day. It is the heart that says, go deeper, look deeper. The heart says, this is a perch. You set up camp, it's okay. But look deeper. That's the truth sense. The heart wants all of it. All that we can be and know. Not out of ambition, but out of love of truth. And Rumi again here then. You may have heard these lines. Come, come, whoever you are, wanderer, worshipper, lover of leaving. Doesn't matter. Ours is not a caravan stop of despair. Even if you've broken your vows 1,000 times, come yet again. Come, come. The whole point of practice isn't that to become more oneself. It's not like we're supposed to become some fantasy image. Kind of Buddha abstraction. We're meant to become more ourselves. Friendlier, easier to be with. Also for ourselves, easier to be with ourselves. The more we're present, the more we orient towards heart presence, things get a little bit roomier. We start to have a little bit more room to be. We don't feel so tight and squished and pressured. And that means the world becomes a bit roomier also. I often find it interesting in our current narrative, I hear people, friends, all the time saying, in this terrible time that is so awful and so many awful things going on, which is true, of course, it's like there's no peace. It's a time of threat. And it's true, and yet here and now this evening, there's peace, right? And there is stillness. And it's true, we have access to more information than any generation previously, and that's not very good for us. It's not like it transforms our behavior, right? And how we act. Maybe more paralyzes us. Isn't it true that human beings since the beginning of time have created messes, fought each other, killed each other, There's been terrible things going on since the beginning of time. And there's something about this that requires heart. So when we read the news and we partake in information, and the heart is gone and the mind goes, oh my God, and it's too much and I can't take it in, and we shut down, or we obsessively consume information. Have you ever done that? When something happens that's really concerning, and you just read about it and read about it, and you follow and follow and follow, like, the latest information, but it won't change anything. It won't make a difference. We need a lot of heart to relate to life and information. And the heart knows, in the heart of heart, the heart knows how to be with the whole range of human experience. Like the whole madness of it all. And the absolute sweetness. But it takes a bit of engagement with our personal heart to find that kind of steadiness, where the heart can stay present even when it hurts. The potential here is to awaken an awareness that does not instinctually contract in contact with experience, but stays open, that knows how to breathe with suffering. Kabir here, one of the ancient Indian poets, says, I was dead, then alive, weeping, then laughing. The power of love came into me, and I became fierce like a lion, then tender like the evening star. The more we know how to have a heart, real heart, and therefore be ourselves, or less self-preoccupied, not so concerned with appearances, less self-conscious. And when we're in love, when we're in love with someone, for as long as it lasts, until all hell breaks loose, or it gets boring. But when we're in love, we want to know the other, right? We want to know the particulars about the other. The habits, what you think, what you feel. We're interested. And we want to be known, right? We also want to be known. We want to show ourselves. Practice can show us that this force of love is also what wants to know, not only the one we fall in love with, but that we want to know. We want to know not only the romantic love out there, but we want to know love. Kabir again says, and he's kind of giving voice to the nature of love and his own longing. He says, are you looking for me? I'm in the next seat. My shoulder is against yours. You will not find me in the stupas, nor in Indian shrine rooms, nor in synagogues, nor in mosques, nor in cathedrals, nor in masses, nor in kirtans, not in legs winding around your neck, nor in eating nothing but vegetables. When you really look for me, you will see me instantly. You will find me in the tiniest house of time. Kabir says, "Student, tell me, what is love?" It is the breath inside the breath. I started by saying that perhaps the only question that matters to ask is, what am I not willing to feel? The Buddhist tradition is centered around this truth, turn to dukkha, that which is hard to bear, turn to it with presence, breathe with it. And when we do, there's more room. We may feel scared and shy and limited and full of issues and lots of things not yet digested. But I often hear people practicing being surprised by their greatness of heart, their love, little touch of presence, and something begins to rise within that is untouched by time and all the heartbreak and drama of life. The truth is that although the human heart can break and does break again and again, it can also handle breaking. There's something in us that remains untouched, even though we've been perhaps worn down. And yet, that it's sometimes called the prayer of the flame in the heart, that says something like, and this can really be like a living sense when we start to really show up for ourselves. When we practice, we show up for ourselves, not for someone else. It's not like any one of us will get gold stars here or anything, right? I mean, like some of you said, it's like, yeah, it would be nice to get something at the end of this. No guarantees. But sometimes what arises is this prayer of the flame. When the heart cries out, I don't care what others think of me. I don't care what I think of me. I just want to live the truth. Do you feel the freedom of that? Mind has its stories. And our social instinct, we're so sensitive when it comes to belongings. Like, am I fitting in good enough? Is it okay? Can I be part of? Can I sit at the dining table? Yeah, that's human. And the love of truth says, I don't care. I don't care what others think of me. I don't care what I think of me. I just love the truth. What's the truth of my experience? Simple and straightforward. So this evening then, after a full day of practice, first day of practice can be quite challenging. Maybe tomorrow easier, but who knows? We can check in on that tomorrow evening. Let this time be a time to be close to your heart. Just listen. Listen to the truth of the heart. Yeah, maybe really profound truths, but it can be also very simple truths like, I'm tired. I'm so tired of pushing. I'm just so tired. Just listen to the heart. And the heart will respond. May all beings know love. May that which needs to heal, heal. May the freedom of the heart be known. Welcome to